This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of the Zioli Show. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, and tell your friends. Either that or I'll leave to become President Trump's chief of staff. Thanks for listening.
Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
Well, I guess the big question is, if Mueller does do a report and the media doesn't like the report, will the media talk about the report, or will they just pretend it didn't happen? Like what happens with a lot of these hate crime hoaxes, when they're revealed to be hoaxes, they just pretend, the story never took place, never occurred. We never even wanted to discuss it. Well, first of all, I found this amazing that yesterday the president announced that his administration was going to stop allowing countries, at least do their best to stop allowing countries who are killing gay people for just being gay, you know, executing gay people. This is kind of a thing that happens around the world. It's a disgusting thing that happens around the world, but it happens nonetheless. So he announced this yesterday, and then after he announced it, you would predictably imagine that many on the left would turn around and say, okay, wow, we got to give this guy some credit. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, we've been calling a homophobe and saying he hates gays and he hates gay people. And here he is coming out there and trying to stop countries around the world from executing people just because they are gay. I mean, you would expect that. You would think that. You would think, well, that's obviously what they're going to say. Hey, give the guy some credit. Not so much. From Scott Shackford, who happens to be gay. Not that that matters. Reason.com. Trump is continuing Obama's opposition to other countries' anti-gay laws. This somehow has LGBT leaders angry. Yes, exactly right. They hate the guy so much. This is what's amazing about the left. They hate the guy so much that when he does something that they should like, they should applaud, they still hate him. They still come after him. President Donald Trump's administration plans to continue the U.S. government's advocacy favoring the decriminalization of homosexuality worldwide. This has, in both a baffling and yet predictable pattern, angered several loud voices in the LGBT community. Yesterday, NBC News reported that the administration, pushed by U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell, who's openly gay, was planning to launch a worldwide effort to end the criminalization of homosexuality worldwide. There are 70 countries still have laws in the books that treat homosexual behavior as a crime. Some have very harsh penalties, including death. Where Iran, they just hanged a guy. They killed him. They hung him. They hanged him. Hanged him. The response to this announcement was nearly comical in the fabricated outrage among certain LGBT voices who wanted to scream from the rooftops that Trump doesn't really actually care about gay people. The Human Rights Campaign, an LGBT lobbying organization that typically favors Democrats, responded with a thread of tweets about how much Trump administration policies and practices have not been in favor of LGBT folks. Though, if one of your complaints is that Trump made fun of Vice President Mike Pence's anti-gay attitudes, you're kind of stepping on your own point, and that's exactly what they did. An even stranger response was the gay magazine Out. I don't know if you know anyone who subscribes to this, or and there's a gay magazine called Out. I didn't even know there were magazines left, let alone, anyway, which gave space to a writer who attempts to argue that the whole plan smacks of some sort of white colonialism coming from Western countries. I told you that yesterday. I jokingly said to you, what is the left going to do on this? How's the left going to respond? On the one hand, most of the countries that are killing gay people are Muslim countries. It's Sharia law, and they're Muslim countries. And if you criticize their culture, their laws, or try to tell them what to do, you are an Islamophobe. So I said, is the left going to side with the gay people and Trump so that they're not killed anymore? Or is that going to be seen as Islamophobic and colonial? You know, the white guys telling the rest of the world how to be. And sure enough, predictably, as if I just wrote this myself, that's exactly how Out magazine it's almost parody. It truly, really is. They say the whole plan smacks of some sort of white colonialism coming from Western countries because the targets are in the Middle East, Africa, and the Caribbean. The headline of Matthew Rodriguez's piece is, quote, Trump's plan to decriminalize homosexuality is an old racist tactic. Mind you, a significant amount of anti-gay animus in some non-Muslim African and Caribbean countries is a result of the spread of certain strains of Western Christianity to those countries. It was colonialism that arguably pushed anti-gay attitudes on some of these countries and encouraged them to treat their gay and transgender inhabitants as evil threats. It's just that that was hundreds of years ago. It's a remarkably stupid, short-sighted argument for a gay outlet to suggest that anti-gay governments should not be subject to criticism on the basis of race or ethnicity because it might be seen as whitesplaining. Whitesplaining. But that's not even the real headline here. Scott Shackford from Reason.com reports, the actual punchline is that the United States had already signed on to the United Nations declaration that called for the decriminalization of homosexuality years ago. NBC News is not accurate in calling this a new push, though the motives may be shifting, the president continuing the policy. So why wasn't it Western colonial racist policy when Obama's administration did it? Does anybody want to know? I'd like to. I'm curious about that. I mean, you know the answer, obviously. But isn't it funny how the gay magazine is criticizing this policy as being mansplaining, whitesplaining, racist? It's literally the same policy the previous administration had. President Bush was widely criticized by LGBT groups for not signing on to the declaration. The Hill followed up on NBC's reporting yesterday, and a State Department representative makes it very clear. This really is not a big policy departure. This is longstanding and bipartisan. And yet, Trump is being yelled at by LGBT voices for continuing a policy implemented by the Obama administration. And the Obama administration's move was widely lauded as a reversal of President Bush's rejection of the policy. So the LGBT leaders, I mean, this shows you exactly how hypocritical the left is right here. That's why I'm bringing this up to you. I mean, if this does not prove it to you, I don't know what does. They were angry at Bush for not signing on to this. They cheered when Obama did. Trump continues it. And they say, ah, this is racist. This is white colonial racism. How dare you tell these countries how to live? How dare you tell these countries what to do? If they want to kill their gay people, who are you to tell them? You Western power, you. Stop with your colonialization. And I jokingly said yesterday on the show, how is the left going to handle this? Are they going to be pro this policy? Or are they going to turn around and say that, no, this is us telling other cultures how to live and be? And sure enough, they prove that what is comical is often truth. And the reason why it's funny is because it's usually true. Trump is flat out going after countries that are trying to kill people just for being gay. And at the same time, LGBT people are turning around and saying, the leaders are turning around and saying, the nerve on this guy. Telling these countries in the Middle East how to live. Who does he think he is? Oh, just another day in Trump's America. 855-839-1210 is the number. 855-839-1210. As the French toast industrial complex does its thing today, forcing us all to buy milk and bread and eggs and more milk and bread and eggs. Now, you know what's fascinating? Al Sharpton does not understand the word ironic. Now, granted, the word was badly butchered by Alanis Morissette in a song in the 90s, so a lot of people don't understand the word ironic. But Al Sharpton, who literally made his bones off of the Tawana Brawley case. Now, if you're too young to remember this, let me give you a refresher. This was also a hate crime that turned out to be a giant hoax. Al Sharpton ran around back then. He was the guy in front of the microphone every single time talking about how the white guys who allegedly raped Tawana Brawley, that never did, that they were guilty, and this is racist and racist and racist and racist. Al Sharpton, who back then was a really huge, big, fat guy, huge. He was out there every single day. Turns out to be a fake story. It's a hoax. It was one of the first real major national hoaxes. It was one of the first major national hoaxes to really grip the nation because it was the TV era, TV news, and the 24-hour news cycle, and it was New York, and it was a huge, huge deal. So when Al Sharpton, who now has a show on MSNBC, who makes a lot of mistakes, I mean, he makes a lot of mistakes. When Al Sharpton goes on TV and says that Jussie Smollett, who's the actor from Empire, who made the whole thing up, this hoax, Trump's America. You know, what's funny, too, is that the Tawana Brawley thing that was very often lauded as Reagan's America, you know, Reagan's hate, the hate and racism of Reagan's America, Trump's America, the same thing. The hate of Trump's America. So now that it's pretty obvious to everybody that Jussie Smollett made it all up, that he hired these two brothers to write a note, a fake note, to send to him, and to go out there in the middle of the very cold Chicago night, throw bleach on his face with a noose, and, you know, call him names and yell, "This is MAGA country," although they probably didn't actually yell that. They probably just said they did, but all made up, giant hoax. And here's Reverend Al. Reverend Al lecturing Jussie Smollett on what should happen if this turns out to be a hoax. Take a listen.
Lawyers for Smollett remain adamant.
Oh, wait, whoa, who? Lawyers for Smuck, who? Smuck? All right, so he's off to a great start. Obviously, you can tell he's really off to a great start here. Okay, go ahead.
Lawyers for Smollett remain adamant that their client was a victim of a hate crime centering on his race and sexual orientation, amid some reports that Smollett may have colluded with two former persons of interest to stage the alleged attack. I, among many others, when hearing of the report, said that the reports were horrific and that we should come with all that we can come with in law enforcement to find out what happened, and the guilty should suffer the maximum.
Come with all? Is he? Wait a second. I think Reverend Al is quoting Tombstone. You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me. Reverend Al's trying to invoke a little Tombstone there.
Come with all we can come with.
That's the call to the station. Guys, come with all we can come with. Everybody.
Oh, God.
Come with all we can come with. All we can come with. Everything. All of it.
Come with all that we can come with in law enforcement to find out what happened, and the guilty should suffer the maximum. I still maintain that. And if it is found that Smollett and these gentlemen did in some way perpetrate something that is not true, they ought to face accountability to the maximum. But let's not act like this is some left-wing hoax that some are saying on social media. President Trump.
What kind of a hoax would it be? I'm curious now. If it's not a left-wing hoax, what kind of a hoax would it be when they're yelling, "This is MAGA country"? Would it be a right-wing hoax? Do you think some conservatives did this to just really make themselves look bad? Well, maybe they staged it. They wanted everybody to know, yeah, this is what I... The logic is just absolutely amazing. But then he goes on to blame Trump. There's so much more. It's glorious. There's more of the Reverend Al, who gets the gigantic irony award here. The guy who literally ran around with Tawana Brawley every single day now says that guy made it up. And Reverend
Lawyers
Al's still not going to believe it.
Smollett.
Right. If Smollett made it up, he won't believe it. But if he did, he'll be very sad or something. We're not quite sure. You know, Bernie's back in the race. And, of course, now everybody on the left is terrified because he raised a lot of money yesterday. A lot of money. That's the irony, right? The guy's a socialist. He's got four houses. Jumps into the race for president and suddenly raises all this money. A lot of it. It's a ton of money. So the rest of them are realizing that Bernie is still a political force to be reckoned with. But the slide towards socialism that the left is going through right now, it's really bad for them in such catastrophic ways they haven't even begun to felt yet. But Bernie's openly owning it. I mean, he's touting socialism. He's openly saying socialism's the way to go. He's not hiding from it anymore. Not even for a second, by the way. 855-839-1210. Chris is in South Jersey. Chris, how you doing? Chris, not there. Okay. Chris's point was 28 people have been murdered in Chicago. So much attention has gone towards Smollett, but nothing to those who were murdered. I really question why we put the emphasis on what we put it on, too. Well, the media put the emphasis on Jussie Smollett. The answer to that is because the media puts the emphasis on it because it's a narrative. The narrative being Trump's America, a place of hate. And everybody's walking around. So you might be at a restaurant writing hateful things on a receipt. You might be walking around beating up people. You might be stopping to put anti-Semitic graffiti up or to leave nooses around, noosai. You might be doing all these things because it's Trump's America and he's allowed it. He's encouraged it. He's embodied it. He wants you to do it. That's why the media runs with these things. And they all turn out to be hoaxes. They're all gigantic frauds. The reason why we're spending time on it is because I think it's very important to know that when somebody makes up a claim like this, they take a lot of police resources. They take up a lot of time. The cops could be doing something like going after the 28 murders or stopping murders or whatever else they could be doing in Chicago except investigating a hoax hate crime. But the real question to ask is, why did the media rush to judgment and say, yeah, why do guys like Reverend Al and everybody else? Because they want it to be true. That's why. They want it to be true. They believe it to be true. They don't even question the facts because they want it to be true, period. You know, I'll tell you something else, too. Bernie Sanders said that I need the media to help sell my socialism. And he knows the media will. He knows they're kindred spirits. Bernie knows the media love what he stands for. Now, they're all working for gigantic corporations. That's, of course, part of the irony of all this, is that the media is gigantic corporate entities now. There's not many left, and they're all owned by big corporations. And so this very same ABC, CBS, NBC, a lot of millionaires, a lot of one percenters there, but they all in their hearts believe in what Bernie Sanders is preaching. It's amazing. You think about it. I mean, the people that sat down with Bernie Sanders for this interview, John Dickerson, who's known as the other guy on the CBS Morning Show. John Dickerson and all the people that produce this show probably do pretty well. You know, they probably live in a nice part of New York. They probably all send their kids to private schools. They probably do quite well. But they all in their hearts are rooting for Bernie or at least somebody who espouses what Bernie espouses. It's the same thing in the nutty state of New Jersey, where today they're announcing a new potential property tax to fund arts and crafts or something. Arts and crafts in school districts. I have no idea. I don't even want to know. All I know is that it doesn't stop with the left in terms of what they want to tax and go after. They love it. So here's Bernie saying to the media, I need the media to help sell my socialism. Cut eight.
Many of the ideas that I talked about, Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, making public colleges and universities tuition free. All of those ideas, people say, oh, Bernie, they're so radical. They are extreme. The American people just won't accept those ideas. Well, you know what's happened in over 3 years? All of those ideas and many more are now part of the political mainstream.
So you're saying the party came your way?
Well, I don't want to say that. I think most people would say that.
Is that your argument then against your competitors, which is, I was Medicare for all before Medicare for all was cool? People will say, my goodness, there's no way this is, everybody's going to get covered, and they're,
John,
you know, some of the estimates that come out.
No, I need you in the media to help us explain the truth.
Yeah.
No more out-of-pocket expenses. No more deductibles. The cost of prescription drugs is going to go down. We expand the kinds of coverage available for senior citizens. It's a good deal.
Notice how John Dickerson doesn't say, not our job in the media to help you sell socialism. Bernie's not wrong, though. I mean, these ideas have been embraced by the Democratic Party. He's 100% right. Yeah, the ideas that he espoused years ago, which were considered fringy left-wing kook, are now mainstream Democrat. They're still fringy kook, but they're now mainstream. They are the core of the Democratic Party. And to Bernie's credit, hey, you got to give it to the guy. He was out there putting this out there when nobody thought it was possible for the Democratic Party to embrace these ideas en masse. Now they're all fighting to be the next Bernie. They're saying, look, oh man, you're too old, you're too white. Get out of here with your ideas. Let somebody else do it. Let a Kamala Harris or an AOC, another odd commie. Let some Beto, rock star Beto O'Rourke, let him do it. Not you, but same ideas. They're all for the same nuttiness. The climate change and, you know, the climate Green New Deal plan. Yesterday, there was a poll. I ended the show with this, and I didn't have a chance to get into it, but Gallup poll identified that most people identify government as the biggest problem. Record number of Americans call government our biggest problem. Nick Gillespie writing, the socialist wave may be more of a media bubble than any sort of legitimate groundswell. Everywhere you turn, you hear the rebirth of socialism, right? Democratic presidential hopefuls such as Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris are calling for massive expansions of the state as part of their platforms. This may not be classic control the means of production socialism, but it's as close as we've seen in decades. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez belongs to the Democratic Socialists of America, which is seen as a rising power within electoral politics. A slim majority, 51% of millennials, have a positive view of the term socialism. That's because of all the brainwashing, obviously. It's the brainwashing. And the entitlement, that they feel they're entitled to everything. You know, I was thinking about this earlier today. When I had a job in high school, college, I worked at a bookshop. If a customer came in and I was stocking the shelves, I had to immediately stop what I was doing, go to that customer and help that customer. If I was working at a pizzeria and I was in the back, you know, putting tomatoes away or something, and a customer walked in, I was supposed to stop what I'm doing, go over there and say, how can I help you? I go into a CVS last night. I'm standing there by the front, waiting. I go, hello. And nothing. I turn the corner. There's a young woman there, and she's stocking the K-cups. And she says, I'll be right with you. And I had to stand there as she finished stocking her K-cups. And then she walked over to me and said, how can I help you? And she was the manager, or the manager trainee. I said to her, I just asked her, I said, don't you think it's probably incumbent upon you, especially as a future manager, to stop what you're doing and go right to the customer and help? She was very annoyed that I even suggested such a thing. This is the generation, though. They don't view you coming into their store as, man, you're buying something which keeps my job going. It's an entitlement of, I have the right to be here. And you have to wait till I'm ready to serve you. It's not, oh, thanks for coming in, because now I'll get to keep my job and maybe I'll become a manager and make some decent money. It's, I'm stacking cake cups. You wait. I'll get to you when I'm good and ready. The mindset is amazing, but it's really not surprising when you think about it. 51% of young people have a positive view of socialism. Isn't that exactly what socialism is? You're entitled to a job. You're entitled to things. You don't have to earn them. You don't have to work hard for them. You just get them. Nick Gillespie writing here, here's some cold water on the rising tide of socialism. Gallup reports a record high percentage of Americans consider the government as the most important threat facing the United States of America. 35% of Americans name the government, poor leadership, or politicians as the greatest problem facing our country. This is the highest percentage Gallup has recorded for this concern, edging out the previous high of 33% during the 2013 federal government shutdown. Gallup has asked Americans what they felt was the most important problem facing the country since 1939 and has regularly compiled mentions of government since 1964. Prior to 2001, the highest percentage mentioning government was 26% during the Watergate scandal. Thus, the current measure is the highest in at least 55 years. But this is what's interesting. Americans have different things in mind when they name the government as the most important problem. An analysis of the verbatim responses to the question from the latest survey find that Americans specifically cite socialism as a major, major problem. Federal government shutdowns and other things that affect their perception of government. But a lot of people just want to be left the hell alone. And they're tired of being taxed. Today, the governor of Connecticut proposing a statewide soda tax. People are getting very tired of this stuff. So look at the 2020 presidential election coming up. And then, you know, there's President Trump doing his thing. As the Democrats all kill each other to prove I'm the biggest lefty. And as they keep doing that, especially to appeal to younger voters, they keep offering up more stuff to give away and more taxes to pay for it. I mean, yesterday, Elizabeth Warren came out with a massive, massive child care program that would cost $70 billion. And it was just make the rich people pay for it. Ah, no big deal. People are getting fed up with this. They're moving out of New Jersey. They're moving out of New York. These high tax states. You even had Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, come out and say, we can't have it anymore with the taxes. People are leaving. We're not going to have enough revenue left. But as they go further to the left, By the time the general election comes around, there's Donald Trump looking like the most reasonable guy in the room, because the rest of them have gone so far to the left, they all look like a giant one commie after another. That's the truth. And the American people are rejecting this nonsense. So the new attorney general has said that he wants the Mueller report wrapped up. And it's probably going to be out next week, which is good. So put all this behind us, but not really put it behind us, because Congress, like I've mentioned to you, will not stop. They won't stop investigating. And this is a real problem. 855-839-1210. This is the Oli Show. Glad you are here. The Congress is never supposed to go. I've talked about this a few times. The impeachment clause is not about what the president did before he became president. Yet that's what they're doing, looking into his business. And so Adam Schiff and these others, they're going to look at the Mueller report. And if it doesn't tell them what they want to say, they're going to turn around and Robert Mueller is going to be a Republican hack. That's how they'll describe him. And in course, in tune, because they all say the same thing. So it'll be one after another. Well, you know, appointed by a Republican. He was appointed by a Republican. Robert Mueller, because right now he's a hero, a dedicated hero who must be allowed to finish his job. But the minute it comes out and there's nothing in there that's showing that President Trump is a Russian puppet, well, then, what did we really expect? You know, I mean, the guy was a Republican, former FBI director. I mean, it was a Republican president who appointed him. He's always been a partisan. I mean, I was surprised he got the job in the first place. And so, in the midst of all this, Anderson Cooper asked Andrew McCabe, the disgraced former FBI director who's got a book out there to sell and who wanted to engage in a coup. He's on Colbert last night. He's on Anderson Cooper last night. He's going on all these shows. Only in America can you allegedly perform a coup d'etat against a sitting president of the United States of America. Almost get away with it. Write a book and then do a media tour to sell that book. I mean, some countries you'd be publicly executed, would you not? In normal world, you'd be shredding every document that could tie you to the failed coup. Nope, not this guy. McCabe is there in every way he possibly can. Remember, he was the acting FBI director who allegedly, in tandem with Rod Rosenstein over at the Department of Justice, discussed using the 25th Amendment to take out the duly elected president of the United States, Donald Trump. Here's McCabe last night at Anderson Cooper, Cut 12.
You know, given all you've seen, is President Trump fit to serve?
I don't think that's for me to determine whether or not he's fit to serve. You know, our decision, certainly in the FBI, the issues that we confront is whether or not an investigation should be undertaken. We don't convict people. We don't throw people in jail. We decide when we think we need to investigate. That's the decision I made in those somewhat crazy days in May of 2017, and it's one I stand by.
Is he fit to lead the FBI? Is he fit to be a commander in chief?
You know, I think that's something that our political leaders and the country at large will have to decide.
Do you still believe the president could be a Russian asset?
I think it's possible. I think that's why we started our investigation. And I'm really anxious to see where Director Mueller concludes that.
Now, two things. He says the FBI investigates. It's not our decision, he says. And yet, isn't that exactly what started this whole thing when James Comey came out and decided that nobody would ever prosecute Hillary Clinton? Remember that day? Here's James Comey in the summer of 2016 coming out and saying, yeah, she did all these things, but no prosecutor would ever prosecute. Therefore, it's over. But no, the FBI did make a decision. They absolutely did, which then led to a series of events happening, including so many people coming out and criticizing James Comey once he dropped the letter as FBI director 11 days before the election. Remember that? And then that led to him being dismissed by the president. So no, the FBI does make these decisions all the time, apparently. And then Rod Rosenstein says, I'm looking forward to seeing what's in the Mueller report. Well, this is the thing now. If the Mueller report says Donald Trump is not an asset to Russia, there is no evidence that Donald Trump is a Russian asset. At that moment, Robert Mueller becomes the most hated man in America. Because this is the bipolar nature of many on the left with regards to James Comey. They loved the guy in the summer of 2016. They hated the guy 11 days before the election when he dropped the letter. They hated the guy until Donald Trump fired him. Then they loved the guy. Now they love the guy. Now they hope he runs for president. Back and forth, back and forth. So if Mueller comes out and clears the president, They're not going to accept that and say, well, can we all just get back to life now? Can we work on things that maybe we all agree on? Can we try to form some consensus on something? No. What Congress will then do, the Democrats in the House, is then abuse the impeachment clause by trying to investigate the president for things that happened before he even got into office. Now, it's very clear the impeachment clause is for a president who abuses the office. It's not for what he did in the past before he became president. It's not. It's not there for that. And I've said that before, and I've mentioned that to you. And yet here we have Adam Schiff and others looking into his business, which is of no concern to them because the president was not the president back then. But their only hope is that Trump doesn't run again. You know, I was overhearing a conversation among some lefties who were thinking there's really nobody. They don't think anybody can really beat Trump. They really don't. But they do think that a Democrat could win if Trump doesn't run again. They do. They think that they don't want him gone. This is interesting now. Some intel I got from some people on the left. They don't want Trump gone because they're even more afraid of Mike Pence. But they don't want Trump to run again because then they view that if it's an open seat, they have a better a Democrat could maybe win. But they know they can't beat him. They know they can't beat him in 2020. They can't. So that's why all of these investigations are ongoing. The Southern District of New York, the state of New York, this is all going on with the intention of finding something on maybe his kids that they can then come to him and say, well, you leave and announce you're not running again and we'll make this all go away. That could be what the ultimate deep state act is all about here, because they don't want Mike Pence. They're scared to death of him. They think Mike Pence is obviously he's a very moral guy with his religious convictions. And they also think Mike Pence could be reelected. And they think that if the seat is open, that there'd be a primary, other Republicans, they wouldn't just let Mike Pence have it. You'd have other Republicans jump in the field. Everything they're going to do from this point forward is to try to get Donald Trump to not be a candidate on the November ballot in 2020. And when everybody's saying this in a few months, you can remember that I've been saying this for some time now. The goal will be their strategy, and it's so wicked and vindictive. Strategy is to go after the kids. And what is my rule is always, if the government wants to find something, they'll find something. So the investigation in the Southern District of New York is why it's so troubling, because if you look at that and you say, if their goal is to find something and then pressure the president, well, you know, don't run again and this all goes away. That's the ultimate deep state plot. And it's not something that you can just shrug off, because it's actively happening as we speak. These investigations are actively happening because they won't let it go. They're resigned to the fact that Donald Trump can't be beaten in 2020. Who, by who? I mean, which one of these Democrats can beat him? They know they can't. I bet you this. If I sat down with James Carville, of course, one of the Democrat operatives who deserves tremendous respect for being a really good Democrat operative. I mean, the guy is old school. The guy elected a president, and he doesn't pretend to be an unbiased journalist like his partner, George Stephanopoulos. He's just an out there. He's a full on. He's who he is. He doesn't hide from that. He doesn't pretend to be middle of the road. He's a Democrat. He's an old school raging Cajun Democrat who loves getting Democrats elected. And if I sat down with him, I would almost guarantee you he would tell me or tell anybody. None of these people can beat Donald Trump. None of them. Because they're all going to step in it when it comes to the environment. They're all going to wind up losing every single coal worker, coal voter out there in America. They're all going to step in it on taxes. They're going to talk about raising taxes. They're going to step in it on providing programs. None of them can win in the states that are going to be key in 2020. And I think that that's why the Democrats realize their only chance is to get Trump off the ballot, which is their next strategy. All right, look, here's the deal. I made a comment before that nobody can beat Donald Trump in 2020. Terry's in King of Prussia. I think he'd like to dispute that. Terry, how you doing on this snow day today?
Doing good, Rich. I beat the snow.
Good for you.
I got home before it started. Anyway, the reason I said that I think, number one, Republicans may have somebody to run against him, because he's not going to win. you're kidding yourself if you think that, because the only reason he won the first time around was, I believe, he conned everybody with the tax break. And the thing is, if you talk to a lot of people today, especially hardworking people, people that have to work physically out there, middle class, are not getting the tax returns that they got last year. And one guy even told me, he said, you know what, I got $5 extra a week all year. At the end of the year, I normally get $3,000 back. That's what he got the year before. He said, this year, I had to pay $1,000. And I've heard that repeated over and over again. And if you think that he's going to get reelected, that's as bad as saying, no new taxes. Remember that one? And that burned him. This is going to burn him, finally. He's conned us. He's told us everything. He hasn't done anything he said. Like, number one, how about infrastructure? How about,
by the way, let me ask you, did you vote for him?
Did I vote for him? Absolutely not. But a lot of my friends did. Union guys are out there voting. They were voting for him, even though they're being told he's going to do everything to hurt us.
But let me ask you this question. If you talk about infrastructure, why won't the Democrats make a deal with him on infrastructure?
What do you? What, wait a minute now. Infrastructure could have been done the last 2 years with all the Republicans.
No, no, Republicans don't really like infrastructure. No, hang on. Republicans don't really like infrastructure. I don't like infrastructure. But Democrats do, so now that they have the House and they have enough votes in the Senate, why don't they pass a big infrastructure bill?
Well, they should, and I hope they do, Rich. I mean, why wouldn't you like...
No, well, why aren't they, though?
You know, every good country that's industrialized has a good infrastructure.
Okay, so why are they not passing the bill? Terry, why are they not doing it?
I think they will. It's just, the time has just started, Rich. Hey, maybe I'll call up my
just started
and tell them we really do need that. That's something that's very important to this country.
What about prescription drugs? Why haven't they introduced a big bill in the House to deal with prescription drug prices? That's something Republicans don't like messing with. Democrats do. The president's on their side on this. Why haven't they done that?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I know with Obama, he wanted it.
I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about right now the Democrats who control the House of Representatives. Why are they not passing a bill right now, going to the Senate with it, where enough Democrats could give the votes and the president could put pressure on McConnell to bring it up for a vote and the president could sign it? Why are they not doing that?
I don't think he would do it. I don't think he'll go through
it. He said it in the State of the Union address. He wants to have... He said it in the State of the Union address. Why are the Democrats not passing these bills?
What bills? I think
exactly. Where are the bills?
No, wait a minute. I think they are trying, Rich. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done nothing for us. He promised us a lot, and he had control of both houses up there.
But I just told you. On those two issues, the Republicans were not going to give the president those issues. Now the Democrats are in charge. You keep talking. Why?
So
now the Democrat. That's enough.
Promise.
Thank you. Have a good day. You love the sound of your own voice, but so do I, and it's my show. Here's the deal. They don't want to give him those things because they don't want to give him a win, because blowhards will then have to turn around and say, well, he did infrastructure. And isn't it amazing, you know, when President Trump was talking about a massive infrastructure package and the Republicans were there, I was one of the conservatives who was saying, this is awful. I hate this stuff. And I do, by the way. And I'm not going to debate it. That's not the subject of this right now. But now you have Democrats in control of Congress and the House. They love this stuff. They love infrastructure. This is one of those areas where Donald Trump and the Democrats see eye to eye. Where's the bill? Not going to be a bill. They could pass a massive infrastructure package tomorrow, which would spend billions and billions of dollars on roads and bridges, putting lots of people to work and using lots of American steel and concrete. Why are they not doing it? It's because of that guy. That guy you just heard. Because they just want to go on and blow smoke and pontificate and spout hot air about how he doesn't do anything, how he doesn't get anything done. And the Democrats know damn well that if they pass an infrastructure package, he'll sign it, people will go back to work, and that only helps him get reelected. So the Democrats will not give him a win. I love that answer, too. Oh, it's early. Well, it's not too early for them to start all their nonsense with investigations. Not too early for that, right? Not too early for Gerald Nadler and Adam Schiff. Gerald Nadler is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House. Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. Not too early for them to start all their little nonsensical investigations, lawyering up, subpoenaing documents, going after witnesses. That's not too early for that. The Democrats are so incredibly full of it. They have the majority in the House. They can do anything they want. Anything. And there are areas where the President of the United States agrees with them. Areas that make me cringe. I'll give you another example. Paid family leave. The idea of the federal government getting in the paid family leave business keeps me up at night in sweats. The Democrats love it. Where's the bill? They don't want to give them a win. They don't want to give Ivanka a win. Look, by the way, Ivanka knows how I feel about this, but it's very important to her, and I understand that. That's okay. I mean, I don't have to agree with everything, right? But the Democrats agree with the president on this point, so why don't they pass it? Every time one of your Democrat blowhard friends goes on and on and on, ask them about those three issues right there. And then when they try to go back to Obama, say, I'm not talking about Obama. See, I should write a book on how to handle this stuff. This is because they do a certain thing, if you notice. Yeah, but when Obama was president, I'm not talking about Obama. Right here, right now, you could pass a bill in the House. You don't even need any Republicans, but you'd have some. Massive infrastructure package goes to the Senate. You'd have enough Republicans there with Democrats to pass it. Goes to the president's desk. Boom. Suddenly now you're building roads and bridges and trains and all the other nonsense that they love. Where is it? You could pass paid family leave tomorrow in the House. You wouldn't even need a single Republican vote. Where are these votes? Anyway, to me, it's amazing. It's amazing to me because I find this to be comical. But I also predicted this, and I'm never wrong. Rarely wrong, but I'm never wrong. Usually not. And that's the thing. I said this was going to happen because there were some people who were optimistic and hopeful that, you know what, Trump is going to sit down with them. They're going to like the guy. They're going to want to do business with him. And you're going to see all these things happen. And I said, no, it's not going to happen. Because they're so afraid of giving Donald Trump any win that he could run on in 2020. They are so selfish. You want to talk about the politics of this? I know why the president didn't get these things when he had both chambers of Congress, because conservatives don't like those three things I just mentioned. We don't like paid family leave on the federal level. We don't like getting involved in drug prices. We don't like massive infrastructure packages. But now the Democrats love all three things, and they're not passing those bills. It tells you everything you need to know about how hypocritical these people are. They know damn well. If tomorrow the president signed into law a massive infrastructure bill, you'd have so many blue-collar guys thrilled to death. My last caller's friends would all be going, told you so. Told you he'd get it done. If tomorrow the president signed into law Ivanka's Paid Family Leave Act, it would be a game changer with the female vote in 2020. And the Democrats know that. And if the president signed into law price controls in some way, shape, or form on prescription drugs, it would be a game changer for senior citizens. They would love it. They would love it. They would go, yes, yes, yes. And the Democrats know that, which is why they're not doing any of these things. And yet they do have so much time on their hands, do they not, to investigate everything? It's almost the end of February. Thank God, by the way. I hate this month. I hate it. But because it's cold and it's short, and you know, I don't really understand the point of it. I've never really understood the point of February. I don't get it. I just really don't get it. There's nothing good about it. Like, look, think about it. Valentine's Day is not enough for me. I mean, New Year's in January, March is St. Patrick's Day, but February is like but we're almost out of it, thank God. We're almost to daylight savings time. Or the end of it, whatever it is. But either way, we have, by this point now, you're almost 100 days into the new Congress. You realize that? You're almost 100 days into the new Congress, and none of the things the president has asked for have even been, I don't think, written as a bill yet. But they have written impeachment bills. These people are frauds. They are absolute frauds. And I'll tell you something. The thing about Donald Trump is that, and this is one of the things in the primary that other Republicans went after him about, he's never hid from positions like this that are not classic conservative or even mildly conservative or even tolerable by some conservatives. The conservatives love him anyway for other reasons, because of the judges and the courts. But that's where the dirty little secret in all this comes out, kids. The Democrats hate what he's doing to the courts. Hate it. See, I could put up with an infrastructure bill. I could put up with any of that other stuff. I could. I wouldn't like it. I could, because there's ways that you could hopefully repeal some stuff or find better ways to spend money. Or, I mean, you know what I mean? But judges are there for decades, generations. Judges on the federal bench for generations. And that's why the Democrats won't give him a legislative win on any of those issues that would help him get reelected. You know it and I know it. They know it too. Make them own it.
Riccioli 3 to 6. Talk Radio 1210. WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.